Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is a particular honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely. My father was a foreign student, born and raised in a small village in Sydney. He grew up herding goats, went to school in a city chef. His father, my grandfather, was a cook.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. To learn how you can showcase your business or nonprofit, go to our website at TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com and click on affiliates for details. I'd like to say hello again to all the listeners tuning in from Australia, Asia, Africa, Antarctica, Europe, and the Americas. We have a great show in store for you today. We're going to be talking a little sports, politics, and entertainment. That's right, Shaq retiring, Rihanna's new video, Man Down, Wiener's new Wiener story, also trouble at New Birth Missionary Baptist Church, and much, much more. I would love to get your comments on any and all of these issues. So sound the alarm. Get on Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, Tumblr, Tout. Send out emails and text messages. Call your friends and family and tell them to tune in right now to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you that are listening via Blog Talk Radio, leave your comments, click the follow button, or follow me on Twitter, and that's at TaylorMade101. And in fact, I will be reading your tweets live on the air. But first, let's take a look at our current events. Now, Shaquille O'Neal, some of you may affectionately call him Superman, Shaq Diesel, Shaqzilla, the Big Easy. But if you haven't heard, Shaquille O'Neal, the man with four rings, 28,596 career points, and scores of nicknames, is much of which I just called him, has finally decided to call it quits, ending one of the most colorful careers in NBA history. That will surely culminate with a Hall of Fame induction. That's right. Shaquille O'Neal, 39 years old, officially announced his retirement on Wednesday using the new social media tool called Tout. Now, I went out there and I took a look at Tout, and it's pretty interesting. He has some hilarious videos out there. But Tout is a real-time video messaging service to announce. He used it to announce to his fans that, and I quote, "We did it. 19 years, baby. I want to thank you very much. That's why I'm telling you first. I'm about to retire. Love you. Talk to you soon." That's right. That's what he announced on his social media tool called Tout. And now, once a businessman, always a businessman, O'Neal said with a smile later on Wednesday. And he said that, "I am the emperor of the social media network. Why text when you can Tout?" O'Neal said he wasn't prepared yet to reminisce about his long and prolific career, which produced three championships with the Lakers and one with the Heat. "Let's save that for the press conference on Friday," said O'Neal, who will hold the media. That media went on his Islesworth home. That's where he held it. And the Celtics spokesman Jeff Twist says that O'Neal has not notified, he did not notify his teams or to the plan of his plans. He signed a 2-year contract with the Boston Celtics last summer, but a persistent Achilles injury prevented him from fulfilling the terms of the deal. So O'Neal first injured his right Achilles on Christmas Day and was able to play only two of the final 35 games of the regular season. Well, So that made him pretty much down for the entire season. Now, speaking of a man being down, Rihanna's Man Down video has created a lot of controversy. In fact, there was an article on MTV's.com website by Gil Kaufman entitled, "I don't think viewers are necessarily getting healthy messages from it." Now, like any good piece of art, Rihanna's controversial Man Down video has elicited a wide variety of opinions. It's running the gamut from condemnation for its bloodshed to praise for its attempt to grapple with the complex of violence against women. Now, the article said, "It strikes me first and foremost that she is working out her personal issues through her art," said Terry O'Neill. He's the national president of the National Organization for Women, who lauded the singer's talent and stressed that she did not find the video exploited at all. Now, a number of groups slammed the clip after its premiere, taking issue with the opening scene in which a hidden Rihanna is shown firing at an unarmed man and hitting him in the back of the head in the middle of a crowded train station. I would encourage you to go out there and take a look at the video, and I would ask you to call in and get your comments about this video. I think it's pretty controversial, but it's interesting how she is beginning to get a lot of pushback for this particular video. And for many, 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 many moons, there have been many male men, rappers, that come out and do all kind of violent activities against their own kind. So I just wonder why this is getting so much controversy. Now, I know that there were some issues that she was involved in with Chris Brown, and I don't know if this is a dig at her. I would like to get your opinion about that, but is this a dig at him, or is she trying to send a message? I'm not real sure what's going on here, but for the most part, there have been many videos out there with a lot of violent activity in them, so why is she getting such a big blowback? I don't know, but anyway. So speaking of shooting, what's going on in Arizona? A man who was apparently upset over a contentious divorce killed his former wife, her lawyer, and three others on Thursday morning in Yuma, Arizona, which is a border city, before killing himself, the authorities and friends of the victim said. The police were still piecing together the confusing situation, which left a trail of six bodies across the city and its environs. After killing five people and wounding a friend of his former wife, the gunman identified as Kerry H. Dias, he was 73 years old, of the farming community of Welton, killed himself, the authority says. It's a tragedy for sure, is what Yuma's mayor said. Alan L. Kerringer, "We are a very close-knit community, and it's very sad that this had happened. It's unusual, and it's not reflective of the values of our community." I find that kind of strange based on the incidents that happened not too long ago. And it was in Arizona as well. And it comes in the wake of all of the harsh immigration rhetoric and laws that were put before the legislature, as well as the gun law changes that in Arizona. So it'll be interesting to see what evolves from this in the weeks and months to come, because this is a second tragedy in Arizona in less than a year. Now, speaking of tragedies, now, Sarah Palin, she's pretty interesting, I should say. I find for her to be a very good draw when it comes to her name, her recognition, the things that she do. She draws attention to herself in a lot of different ways. However, comma, as Jima always says, it is interesting when she kind of longs for this media, this spotlight, when she gets her opportunity to speak in front of the cameras, something just strange comes out of her mouth. I don't know any other way to put it, but strange. Now, apparently, she tried to explain her recollection, if you will, of what happened with the with the Midnight Ride. It's Paul Revere's ride. Some people call it the Midnight Ride. But I want to play for you a clip of what she said and when asked about Paul Revere. Take a listen.
American history. She visited the Old North Church today here in Boston, the focal point of Paul Revere's historic ride, but it sounds like she got a bit confused on the details.
He who warned the British that they weren't going to be taking away our arms by ringing those bells and making sure as he's riding his horse through town to send those warning shots and bells that we were going to be secure and we were going to be free.
It appears Sarah.
Okay, so I don't know if you got all of that, but she was saying that Paul Revere was warning the British because of the arms, and so the bells were ringing so they could be free. Okay. Now, if you go out, anybody has ever taken any kind of history class, kind of know what happened during that time frame, and then I'm going to kind of recapture some of the events. And then the day before April the 18th, Revere, Paul that is, had instructed Robert Newman, the sexton of the Old North Church, to send a signal by lantern to alert colonists in Charleston as to the movements of the troops when the information became known in what is well known today by the phrase, one if by land, two if by sea. One lantern in the steeple would signal the army's choice of land route, while two lanterns would signal the route by water. Now, riding through the present-day Somerville, Medford, and Arlington, Revere warned patriots along his route, many of whom set out on horseback to deliver warnings of their own. By the end of the night, there were probably as many as 40 riders through Middlesex County carrying the news of the army's advance. Revere did not shout the phrase later attributed to him, the British are coming, largely because the admission depended on secrecy and countryside was filled by with the British Army patrols. Also, most colonial residents at the time considered themselves British, as they were all legally British subjects. Revere's warning, according to the eyewitness accounts of the ride and Revere's own description, was the regulars are coming. Revere arrived in Lexington around midnight, where Dawes arriving about a half hour later. Now, it goes on to talk about the other things, but the fact that ringing bells and warning about arms and all these things, it's just her own, again, revisionism of our history. And I don't understand how she continues to get away with this and still be considered a serious contender for the presidency of the United States, of these Americas. Anyway, I digress. So we're going to take a quick break here, and when we return, we're going to open up the phone lines and take your calls and get my famous co-host, Jima, to weigh in on these and other issues. We'll be right back. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Current Events with Patrick Cook is joining the fight with First Lady Michelle Obama to help feed hungry children and stop childhood obesity. During the school year, many children receive free and reduced price breakfast and lunch as a result of the school breakfast and national school lunch programs. However, when the last bell sounds, marking the end of the school year, for many, it marks the beginning of hunger that will plague them throughout the summer. Here at Current Events, we're going to fill that nutrition gap and make sure children can get the nutritious meals they need. To learn how you can help with this worthy cause, go to TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free. That's TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for a discounted book for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Come back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. We're going to open up the phone lines here in just a few moments and hear from our listeners. In the meantime, Jima, I'd like you to weigh in on a few of the issues. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
First question, Shaquille O'Neal, Shaq Diesel, as he's affectionately known as. In fact, he mentioned on his tout video blog that he was looking for people to send him some nicknames as for his retirement. So that was interesting. So what does Shaq Diesel's retiring do for the game of basketball?
Well, it is definitely the end of an era, end of the big man that could score, that was dominant, that controlled the game. Definite end of that. And I think end of how we will characterize the big man as we know it. Shaq had a unique ability to demand and command attention from defenders, often being triple teamed on plays down the court. But he was a good reader of the court in terms of being able to see and could get that ball out. And to be a big man in the early days of his career, Shaq was pretty quick on his feet as well. So I think he redefined that role of a big-time center. But we've not had another Shaq. I mean, you know, we've had a lot of people come in the league that some have given titles of the next Magic or the next MJ or the next Bird. You haven't heard anybody say this is the next Shaq. And that, in its, at least I haven't, and I consider myself a basketball person. That's because those are some pretty big shoes to fill, literally and figuratively, but because he was a different type of big man. So, I'm a Mr. Diesel.
Where do you think he would end up in the history books as far as great players are concerned?
Oh, he's in the greatest. I mean, you can't deny him that. His points total, his rings, championships, how he dominated the game. When Shaq, I mean, who knew it had been 19 years? I was looking back thinking, wow, man, Shaq grew up together, you know, basically, you know, and, you know, 39 and, you know, and all that he brought to the game, and he brought his heart and soul to the game every time he hit the court, you know, when he was healthy. And then the fact that you didn't hear a lot about Shaq negatively, you know, that you hear lately about people. And now it kind of makes sense to me why, because of the time that he came into the league, that was even a different time. You know, wasn't all these things going on in the world with all this social media, this and that, and cameras following you around 24/7 and 24-hour news cycle. I mean, even thinking just in Shaq's time of being in the NBA, how the world has changed in terms of technology. You know, if you just look at just that time period, the 19 years he spent in the NBA, how we've grown, I would say, hopefully, in terms of technology and how things are different. So, I think Shaq will be in. He's in the books. He's a Hall of Famer, hands down. You know, he's in the top 50, and, you know, his style of play, I think, will be missed in the NBA.
Do you think the feud between Kobe and Shaq has been put to rest?
I would hope so, because, you know, the amount of money both of them have made over the course of time should render itself a good remedy for getting over something. But, you know, Kobe isn't a spring chicken anymore either, so he's on the downside of his career too. So he might want to make sure he goes out on a happy note. And even though Shaq's last couple of years have been hindered with injuries, that did not stop that when he got in the game, people still feared him when he was in the game.
That's
you just
true.
Didn't leave Shaq wide open.
Right.
You know, you just didn't let him just come down in the paint and just do whatever, because he was, you know, a little older. You still feared what he was capable of doing. And that's how you want to go out. Whether you win 5 rings or 0 rings, you want to go out still being a feared player in the NBA.
Right. And it was, speaking of feuds, I don't know if you heard this or not, but Scottie Pippen came out this weekend and trying to and kind of compare LeBron James to Michael Jordan and basically saying that, you know, Michael Jordan was like the one of the best people to ever play the game, and LeBron James is in that same light. And Kareem put Scottie Pippen in check a little bit, and he wrote him a letter, and this was interesting. It was an open letter to Scottie Pippen published in the L.A. Times, and here's what the letter said. Dear Scottie, I have nothing but respect for you as my friend, as an athlete, and knowledgeable basketball mind. But you are way off in your assessment of who is the greatest player of all time and the greatest scorer of all time. Your comments are off because of your limited perspective. You obviously never saw Wilt Chamberlain play, who undoubtedly was the greatest scorer this game has ever known. When did Michael Jordan ever average 50.4 points per game, plus 25.7 rebounds? We will never accurately know how many shots Wilt blocked. Oh, by the way, in 1967 and 68, Wilt was a league leader in assists. Did Michael Jordan ever score 100 points in a game? How many times did Michael Jordan score more than 60 points in a game? Michael Jordan led the league in scoring in consecutive seasons for 10 years, but he did this in an NBA that eventually expanded into a 30-team versus when Wilt played, and there were only 8 teams in terms of winning. Michael excelled as both an emotional and scoring leader, but Bill Russell's Celtics won 8 consecutive NBA championships. So, I mean, which begs the question all the time when you hear the argument about the best players, people in our generation, it's a generational kind of thing, because this generation seems to think the feud is between Michael Jordan and LeBron James, or Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant, and you know, in those particular, but they really have no real knowledge of, you know, the earlier Wilt Chambers and Bill Russells, and so I thought that was interesting for Kareem to kind of put it all back into perspective when we're talking about greatest players.
Right, and I think that's why I would say that commending to the NBA those years ago when they came up with their top 50. Back then, and it was a crossover from early to that time, the current players. So it didn't just look at one era, it looked at the NBA in its totality, and in doing so, it did embody those players that had been great over time. And I think what we tend to forget, the argument will always be, well, it was a different time. Yeah, it was rougher, because they didn't have all the luxuries you have now. So
right.
I guarantee you those guys were tougher because they didn't have the multi-million dollar workout rooms and trainers and all of these things, machines that you have to help you get in shape. They ran and walked to get into shape. I mean, you know, I'm probably stretching a little bit. But, you know, they didn't have all of the bells and whistles. So they were tougher. They were tougher. I mean, that's why when you go back, you know, one of my all-time favorite series in the NBA is the Detroit Pistons and the Lakers. When Isaiah Thomas was out there with that bandage wrapped around his thigh area.
Right, right,
remember
right.
Remember that.
That
was all-time classic, you know, we are fighting to death almost. And now you get people with a hangnail and they don't want to play.
Right.
You know, they're so pampered. So those guys were tough. They were in it for the love of the game. They were in it because basketball was everything to them. It wasn't about all the endorsements because everybody wasn't getting one. You look up nowadays, you got somebody in the league for a day and they got an endorsement, but they haven't done anything.
Right.
All they have is a name, and you're like, but you have no stats. You know, so it's definitely a different time, definitely.
Yeah. I want to shift gears for a minute and talking about different times. This whole Rihanna video thing, did you get a chance to take a look at it?
I did take a look at it.
Okay, so for the listeners out there that hadn't had an opportunity to take a look at the video, it starts, I would encourage you to go look at it to get the full perspective of what we're talking about here. But in the beginning of the video, Rihanna's kind of hides behind, you know, kind of in a shadow, if you will, and this young man was walking through, an area, an open area, and she files around, and it strikes the man. He falls. Blood is on the floor. And then it moves into another scene where it talks about what happened before. So it gives you the backstory after it shows you what happened. And so my question I want to pose to the brilliant Jima here is, I want to know, why is this an issue for Rihanna when we always see men being displayed in this manner, whether it be just for GP, if you will, or whether it's in retaliation to something?
Well, I think it's two reasons. Well, it's probably more than that, but I think a lot of it is on the backside of the abuse or whatever that happened between her and Chris Brown, and that how can a person who has been that kind of way now say it's okay to hurt people. That's the most simplest thing how I can see it. Now, the other part of that is I agree with you in terms of the most violent thing we've seen in a music video, although I have to admit I haven't seen many music videos lately because I don't really understand a lot of music because they're not really about anything. But this one here, even watching this, I couldn't really – what was she trying to say? Until, I said, well, let me listen and not look. Because in looking, I wasn't getting what I think her message at the end was all about, which was, I thought, you know, she wasn't glorifying what she had done. But I think, you know, in terms of the sex of the music industry is shown here at its highest level because, like you stated and alluded to, in other genres of music, there's all sorts of perceptions of violence, of things happening, of women being mistreated and bonded, and all sorts of other sorts of things, and there's not such an outcry. And so how is it that when a person takes full control of what's happened to them, now that's a problem? You know, maybe it was the blood. I don't know. Maybe that's what kind of, you know, made people a little uneasy.
Well, what I find just a little, odd, if you will, is the fact that there's a major outcry against her. And, of course, she tweeted about it, and they had this big major response about, you know, she's not a role model, she doesn't have any kids, and it's a person's responsibility to kind of filter what their kids watch and things of that nature, you know. Besides this crazy rant that she went on, I think it could be considered irresponsible for someone to suggest the way that you approach a situation is through murder. Now, see, that's the only thing that I find that's a little strange in this situation, because she's implying, and through what I gather from the video, is that she was attacked by somebody. And I didn't see where he, you know, cut her or harmed her. And I mean, he did violate her. Now, don't get me wrong. He did violate her, right? But her response to that violation was murder. And so it seems to me that she's suggesting the way that you deal with these type of situations is through this type of retaliation. That's the only thing I find disturbing in the whole sense. What do you think?
Well, that's what you see, but I also hear in the song, in the actual lyrics, which is probably half the problem with the world, we don't actually listen to words anymore, but I hear a sense of, you know, I shouldn't have done that, you know, that could have been somebody's son, it's a word in there, and, you know, that wasn't the right thing to do. So I hear that in the lyrics, but if I'm in a busy club and all I see is the video, I'm not hearing the lyrics. All I'm seeing is the video. And so the video is going to go along with exactly what you're saying. But if you were listening to the words, it's not a song that's glorifying what she's done. And as a matter of fact, it's in my opinion, on a small scale is somewhat, you know, I really should have thought about this, and I regret doing what I've done because I'm probably going to go to jail.
Mm-hmm. But the other part of the song talks about how she fled, right? So to me, this is kind of a premeditated form of acting out, as opposed to somebody just, you know, reacting to a situation, because obviously this happened a day before, based on how the video was laid out, and then the fact that she stood and waited for him to go through this particular crowded area, like almost like she planned it out, and then after the situation happened, she fled. So, I understand listening to the lyrics and watching the video as well as seeing how it all playing out. When you put all the pieces together, it still, to me, seems to suggest that she was condoning this type of behavior.
Well, I'm going to respectfully disagree. I don't think she was condoning it. It does happen. Let's not play like we're Pollyannas and life is great and nobody ever is attacked or hurt and violated, because it happens every day. It's probably one happening right now as we speak. People respond differently to those types of traumas. And then, you know, there's cases every day where someone does something based on some traumatic experience that happened to them even when they were a child. So people respond and react to those things in certain kind of ways. Now, do I agree that you go out and you kill somebody because you've been violated? Of course not. Do I understand it? I really do. But that doesn't mean that it's okay to go and do. Could it have been handled differently? Maybe. You know, the backstory could be maybe that wasn't the first time he did it. Maybe that's why he was trying to be so friendly with her. Maybe they was in a relationship before and they wasn't. I mean, there's so many things that's not said in the video or the song that could lead one to argue for or against on either side. But I agree, there has to be a better way in which we handle conflict and hurt and harm, and that taking another life, in my opinion, is never the right answer. But I understand it when it happens, because that trauma can be so deep.
Now, I would love to get some of my listeners to weigh in on this particular situation. So to join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Now, more violent activity in Arizona. What's going on in Arizona?
Excuse me. I am not sure what they got going on in Arizona, but I sure don't want to drink none of that water down there. It seems, and my thing mostly with people who want to kill other people and then kill themselves, how about they just kill themselves first? Then they can kill everybody else.
Right.
I mean, if at the end your ultimate goal is you're going to kill yourself, could you just start with you and
right.
then just leave everybody else alone? You know, so that's the thing that saddens me the most is when these things happen. You know, they take so many other people with them and they destroy so many other lives that it's unfortunate and it's unnecessary. So our justice system on some levels is just not just. Our court system does not handle situations correctly. We put some of the wrong people back out on the streets. We let people, you know, an abused woman or a person who's been stalked have to go through so many hoops and circles to get, you know, people to be on a list where they can't be in their space. You got to go, well, have you done this? You got to answer all these things before you can have yourself protected. And it just shouldn't be that way. In Arizona, I don't really know what's going on down there, but their gun laws need to be looked at, because it's obvious that they got some people who are not mentally stable owning firearms.
And so it begs the question, especially for Arizona, what are they doing to as a preventive measure? I mean, if you have two horrific incidents like this in a very relatively short period of time, then obviously there's some measures need to be put in place to protect the citizens.
Well, I think the problem with that is that, and I think they just passed some law down there too. I'm not sure that made it where, you know, other people on campus or something could carry weapons. Or that might be here in Texas. I'm not sure. But I don't think they're making it more difficult. I think they're making it easy because of this whole right to bear arms. And just because something is your right to do doesn't mean you're mentally capable to handle doing it.
Right.
And if there's no way of monitoring who's getting the guns, which we know that it's not, because there's too many children walking around with guns, so we know there's no real monitoring system in place, it seems to me that somebody is asleep at the wheel, not just state by state, but on a federal level. I'm disappointed in the federal government that there hasn't been more done to decrease the amount of deaths we have by gunfire.
I know. It's really tragic.
State.
Yeah, and it continues to happen, continues to escalate, and you're right. I mean, it should be at some point, federal legislation should kick in to protect the citizens. I mean, there's obviously enough legislation out there to protect an owner's right to bear arms, but it seems like there's not enough out there to protect the average everyday citizens from these people that are carrying these guns around and just, you know, acting out of ludicrosity. All right, we're going to take another break here, and when we return, I want to open up the phone lines and talk a little bit about Sarah Palin and her latest gaffe. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Current Events with Patrick Cook is joining the fight with First Lady Michelle Obama to help feed hungry children and stop childhood obesity. During the school year, many children receive free and reduced price breakfast and lunch as a result of the school breakfast and national school lunch programs. However, when the last bell sounds, marking the end of the school year, for many, it marks the beginning of hunger that will plague them throughout the summer. Here at Current Events, we're going to fill that nutrition gap and make sure children can get the nutritious meals they need. To learn how you can help with this worthy cause, go to TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free. That's TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for a discounted book for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. Now, Jima, Sarah Palin, what is going on with this young lady?
Sarah Palin. I think a lot of how she gets away with some of her gaffe, as they've been called lately, is because some stuff your basic American may not know either. I mean, there's some stuff in history that I don't know if they still teach it like we were taught. So you have a great generation or so of people who may not know this stuff about Paul Revere and how it all really went down and, you know, all these other things that she seems to be clueless about sometimes. So, and then she says it in such a quirky manner that your mind is like, surely that's not what she meant. So you give her the benefit of the doubt. I mean, you literally sit there and watch her, and you're like, did she just say that? And then you're waiting for the moment where she comes back and corrects herself, or you're waiting for the moment where she even admits that that was a mistake, and it never comes. But you're actually sitting there watching, and you're like, no, that's not right. And then you're waiting for her to fix it, and she never does. So I don't know. I don't get it.
All right, I'm gonna take a listen.
And I don't know. I don't know how someone with that doesn't want to be president keeps showing up at all these presidential like functions.
Right. I want to take a listen again at what she said.
In history. She visited the Old North Church today here in Boston, the focal point of Paul Revere's historic ride, but it sounds like she got a bit confused on the details.
He who warned the British that they weren't going to be taking away our arms by ringing those bells and making sure as he's riding his horse through town to send those warning shots and bells that we were going to be secure and we were going to be free.
So in my thing is, if I am going to be a shoemaker, right, I should at least understand basic concepts of soles, shoelaces, leather, you know, things of that nature. If I'm going to be a baker, it would at least behoove me to understand how to put flour in, how to bake a cake and all those things, right? And if I'm going to put myself in a position to be the leader of the free world and a lot of the things that is going on about our history and about what's going on for legislative to make laws and things of that nature, I would at least be astute in that area. And so I agree with you that a large majority of the American people, and as indicated in our test scores, may not know a lot of these things. But it is really incumbent upon her to at least know it.
Well, the references that you make in terms of being a shoemaker and a baker is about if you want to be a good shoemaker and a great baker,
mm-hmm.
you would find out those things that you need to know in order to make it be what you want it to be, right?
That's right.
We have no clue whether or not she wants to be a great politician. She just might just want to be on the camera every other week or every other day. We don't have a clue. She has not shown herself that she's a student of anything but photo ops. That's what she's mastered. She's mastered opportunity. She's mastered photo ops. She's mastered how to get people excited about absolutely nothing. With that, I will give her an A++ for that. But she has not mastered what it takes to be the ruler of these United States of America. She hasn't mastered that. So in my opinion, she will continue a sideshow. And people can say she's a contender. I even think DNC President Howard Dean, Chairman Howard Dean said that she could beat Obama. And I want to say, in what lifetime could she beat President Obama? That's a debate I would pay for. I would pay for the debate of Obama and Sarah Palin. I would pay for that one. I would pay for she could debate Michelle. That's one I would pay for. I would pay, put that on pay-per-view. I'd pay for that.
Mm-hmm.
And whoever won, their money go to their campaign. I'm telling you. So she's mastered those things, but she's all style and no substance. And in my opinion, if we go larger than just Sarah Palin, that is the problem of that whole Republican field right now. I can't even say some of them have style because, you know, you listen to Mitt Romney and Tim Pawlenty and it's like watching paint dry, as I think you stated a couple weeks ago, and it hasn't gotten any better. But now, you know, she has a contender because Michelle Bachmann is looming in the background. So Sarah Palin might want to brush up on her game a little bit because neither one of them know anything about history.
Right. So
that's going to be an interesting conversation.
Now, you're talking about a debate to watch? That's what I'll pay for. Them two against each other. And that would be a sight for sore eyes.
And it's funny because I was just doing some research and they talked about the, you know, top 13 Sarah Palin gaffes. And it's just amazing some of the things she said over the years that she – now, let's be clear – we've only known Sarah Palin since 2007,
mm-hmm,
8.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So we haven't known her that long, right? And yet in this short time that we've known her, she's gotten so many things wrong. about history, about culture, about geography, seeing Russia from her back door, porch, or whatever, about what she reads or not reads. We found out so many things about her, and yet and still she's supposed to be a prime candidate. I don't know how. I'm missing it. I am truly, truly missing it.
Well, it saddens me to see that she can continue to capture the headlines like that, and it's really not doing anything but kind of boosting her sales and she's just making a lot more money from it. Because again, I don't think she's going to ever be in a position to run for these United States of America. Not in the next election cycle. I mean, if she go to school and maybe get a degree instead of on political science or something like that, she may, because she already has the notoriety. She just needs to get some substance about her style, as you mentioned.
Correct. Yeah.
Now, speaking about paying for something, it turns out that the Bishop Eddie Long, he settled. Now, according to a report from News One, an Elevated source within New Birth Missionary Baptist Church says that the events in the wake of Bishop Eddie Long's sex scandal have amounted to a what they call three strikes against him, and possibly the future of the institution. A settlement was reached in the case last month, and sources say that some members of the 25,000 member congregation are now ready to jump ship. Why? Why are they leaving Bishop Eddie Long's church, Jim?
Well, he said he was going to fight, and he didn't. That, in my opinion, that's the end. That's the bottom line. And in not fighting, to some, that means that you are admitting guilt by the settlement, or mm-hmm. or at least admitting some sort of wrongdoing.
Mm-hmm.
And so because of that, people are not willing to hang around anymore. They hung around because they believed in you, and you said you was going to do something, and you didn't do it. So, you know, there's no motivation for them to continue.
So,
continue to be at his church, because it doesn't appear as though he would definitely be a man of his word.
Right. So do you think that, Reverend Bernice King, Martin Luther King Jr.'s youngest daughter, announced her departure. Do you think she's leaving because of those same reasons?
Well, I have to trust Miss Sister Bernice at her word by stating that, you know, she's going on to a higher calling and to start her own ministry. And I think it might be coincidental that it happened the same time that everything kind of washed itself out. In an article, she stated that she had already mentioned to him that last Sunday would be her last Sunday, that she would be done in May. Maybe she was prophetic in her thinking that all of this would be done by May.
mm-hmm.
She was just going to get out then, but she had already had a private conversation with him about her time there was coming to an end, and it was time for her to step out and to do her own thing based on, you know, what the Lord had spoken to her. So I think it may have been coincidence, or she just had a line to the Almighty that nobody else had. And what I find odd today is that, reading an article, that the bishop announced today that the church is going to be audited.
Mm-hmm.
So I find that quite interesting, coming up on the heels of his announcement and the settlement, that now the church is going to be audited. So,
You know, there are a lot of these. I ain't gonna say a lot. That's misleading. But there have been some churches that went through this over the last couple of decades. Why is this one seem to be so different?
In terms of
the amount of publicity that it's getting, the amount of the amount of people that are seem to be pulling out, the amount of, people are really, really seem to be angry at the bishop.
Well, they're angry at the bishop because if any of the allegations were true, his strong opposition to homosexuality to preach and march and hold rallies and protest about it, and then be involved in those same homosexuality activities that you spoke out so strongly against, is just at the highest level of hypocrisy.
Okay.
And so it's not even about the fact that he's a man and he stumbled and fell. It's the highest level of being a hypocrite. You do all of this about, you know, this being wrong and we shouldn't do this and we need to pray the gay away and do all of these things. And then you are allegedly involved in these very same acts that you are condemning every Sunday or every time there's a march. That is where I think people's anger is at, is in that.
So what do you think is next for the bishop then? Let's say this eventually will blow over, because it will. There'll be other pastors out there that will fall, and not just pastors, laymen too. I mean, you know, so it's not just him. There'll be other people that will fall. What do you think is in the future for Bishop Long now?
Well, I can tell you based on some research that he's due to open a new church in Birmingham, Alabama.
Oh, my goodness. Are you serious?
He's expanding to Birmingham as well as in Denver, Colorado.
Denver, huh?
Denver. Go figure.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's expanding to Birmingham and to Denver, and has asked his parishioners to sow a seed offering of $500 or $1,000 to help this venture move forward.
Wow. Yeah. Well, he's a man of God. He's a man of faith. So you expect him to repent and come back stronger?
You know, my only concern is that if it happened once and this is what you had to do and you don't get any help for whatever that issue is mentally that you're trying to suppress and you don't go seek counsel, you'll be back here again in a couple years.
You know,
and
that's
this time, it won't be about money.
You know, that's interesting, because in a lot of cases when things happen like this to people, especially if they have any kind of substance of money, they could always, you know, make these things go away. But as you said, if they don't address the core issue, then the probability of it coming back is more likely.
Right. Because the settlement is closed, we won't ever really know what he admitted to.
Mm-hmm.
We can only speculate that he had to admit to something for them to accept the payment.
Right.
And then, but on the flip side of that, then you say, well, that's all they really wanted was the money anyway. So were they ever really telling the truth? Well, there had to be. I'm not going to pay for something that I know I didn't do.
Right.
So, you know, he had to have done something. It may not have been to the level that all of the reporting came out said, but it was, see, the problem with the bishop's case was it started out as one and ended up to be four or five people. That's what made this case a little bit, you know, different. I think people could handle one, but when, you know, another person came and then another young man came and another young man came, it was like, wait a minute now. Mm-hmm. Everybody can't be telling the story.
Right.
Know? You know, come on now. Something in this milk is not clean. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, there has to be some kind of truth to something. Even if it's just that, you know, one of the claims of sleeping in the rooms together when they went on these trips out of the country. You know, if that did happen, why are you sleeping in the room with young men when, you know, you could probably have your own room?
Right.
So even if nothing happened, the perception is it had the potential to, and it probably did.
So what happens then if he would have said, "Look, I did it. I failed. I did it. You know, forgive me, and let's move on." What do you think the repercussions would have been?
Well, you would have had some diehard members of New Birth that would have stood by their pastor no matter what. No matter what, you would have had some diehard members of New Birth who would have walked instantly.
Mm-hmm.
So somewhere in the middle would have been those people who would have to really have their own cleansing for themselves as to how to accept him back. Because at this point, it's really about, our, you know, those people forgiveness of him as well,
right,
and them accepting him back as their spiritual mentor, because a pastor's position is very serious, because
right,
he is in direct, you know, according to scripture, you know, in charge of and over your spiritual life. And if his life isn't right, that means his prayers are not reaching the Father, even on your behalf. So how do you, you know, how do you manage knowing that, knowing he's had some indiscretions, not just because he's a bishop or not just because he's a man, but here's a man that's supposed to be praying on your behalf. And so you begin to wonder if those things that you've been asking for and you've counseled with him on haven't been answered is because the man himself is not right. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. So it almost justifies why he's sealing the particular settlement. Because if it gets out that this happened, then all of those things you just talked about could come into play.
Right. So, you know, I think, I go back to my original statement, the fact that he claimed he was going to fight and that he had done nothing wrong, and he compared himself to, was it David? Yeah, and five stones.
Right.
And he hadn't thrown his stone. He, you know, he had all these words of motivation and hype, and then, you know, he settles and it's closed and we don't know what happened. It just doesn't feel right. It might be perfectly okay.
Right,
but it just don't feel right, you know. It just doesn't have the right feeling to it. So mm-hmm. I think that's pretty much where a lot of people are. And we just have to be careful and recognize that, you know, our pastors are people. We should hold no man in any, you know, high regard, like they're perfect, because no man is perfect. And they will disappoint you. The higher you hold them up, the deeper that level of disappointment will be when it happens. Because it's going to happen. Because it has to. They're human.
That's right. Well, that's our show today. I would like to, Jim, I would like to say one thing, though, before we close out the show for today. Now, we're going to be opening up a show for you in the coming weeks. So I just want to make sure that the listeners out there know that as Jima will have an actual spinoff in the coming weeks that's going to be talking about more issues in depth. And so in the weeks and days to come, you're going to be hearing more and more about that. Also, Jima has a blog out there that I absolutely just adore. It is, and you can go out there and get a lot more information about that at askjima.blogspot.com. That's askjema.blogspot.com. Also, I want to mention that we're having a summer program for youth this year. It is it's Faith Missionary Baptist Church, in conjunction with TaylorMade Training and Consulting, is conducting its inaugural summer feeding program. There are three ways that you can help. We can always use your donations. You can go out to TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free. And you can go out there and fill out a registration form to either come out and help participate as far as teach some of the courses that we're going to be having, or you can just go out, just tell somebody. Tell others how our program helped feed hungry children for free. We're not charging anything for this program. We're going to be feeding them breakfast. We're going to be feeding them lunch, and we're also going to be having reading, math, STEM type of activity, as well as life skills. It's going to be happening from June the 13th, which is next Monday, to August the 5th. We encourage you to come out and donate, come out and participate, and just kind of come and watch what we're doing. I'm going to actually stream live the event a couple of days throughout the summer so you can get a good feel for what we're doing out there. As I said, that's our show for today. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. Until next time, remember, it is written, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. So stay engaged, stay informed, and stay plugged in to Current Events with Patrick Cook. You're listening to the sounds of Joyce Spencer in Sweet Dreams. Take us away, Joyce.